The following podcast is a production of Institutional Real Estate Incorporated. For the most comprehensive industry news and information, visit our website at irei.com and sign up for our free daily news alerts.
Welcome to Report from Europe. This is Mike Consol. On the phone with me from England is Richard Fleming, editor of Institutional Real Estate Americas. Richard, much going on in Europe these days. There's a major speech coming up, an election, some various other political machinations. Get us up to speed on what you're seeing out there and some of your own speculation on the matters.
Well, Europe is always an interesting place. Good morning, Mike. It's an interesting place even more so at the moment because there is so much happening that will have long-term implications for the future of the continent. We have tomorrow evening, we have a speech in Florence, Italy, by the UK Prime Minister, where we're told that she will be outlining her thoughts on what the UK can offer in its Brexit negotiations. And then on Sunday in Germany, we have the federal election, which we expect Chancellor Merkel once again to be leader of the largest party. The debate mainly is about who Chancellor Merkel will decide to go into coalition with, assuming she wins.
What is the atmosphere in England and in Europe right now, just in terms of, you know, the relationship with the United States has become really strained? We just had President Donald Trump go to the UN and give a speech that was roundly criticized by some leaders in Europe. And it was Chancellor Merkel who said, you know, we're on our own. She said that months ago, that basically that the tight relationship, the NATO relationship, the transatlantic relationship is not being honored by this new U.S. president. Can you speak to, particularly in the business community, what the atmosphere is like right now, or the attitude towards the United States and maybe just overall the relationship within Europe between the various countries?
I don't think there's much of a change as yet. I think we're still waiting to see how U.S. policy evolves with President Trump. It's been a disturbing period, perhaps, for some people, but he's still feeling his way. He's still, we sense, not quite on top of it. And there's more to come. He obviously is preoccupied with North Korea, as are we all. Those missiles are going further and further every time, and of course missiles can go in any direction. It's difficult to speak of Europe as one voice on this because every country will have its own opinion and its own view as to the effects of what is happening in the United States on their economy and their business life. Germany is concerned, obviously, that President Trump has threatened to have a go at the surplus that allegedly exists between German trade and U.S. trade. German car manufacturers are in his sights as well, we're told. German car manufacturers never like to hear that their markets may be threatened.
There's also the Russia factor, the aggression from Vladimir Putin, some questions surrounding what his next move will be. And there's been reporting here in the United States about very aggressive moves in the Arctic as the ice continues to melt because of global warming and access to oil reserves, enormous oil reserves in the Arctic. He is militarizing that area, and there's going to be some disputes as to whether that oil belongs to Russia or the United States or Canada, or who knows who might step into that. What about Russia? With North Korea firing missiles, obviously that's kind of top of mind, but Vladimir Putin has been sitting there and unusually quiet, actually, in recent months.
I think you're right to highlight the Arctic. That certainly would be a Cold War if it were to happen. If President Putin has been quiet, it's because he's got other things on his agenda. Russia, of course, is hosting the 2018 FIFA World Cup, the soccer tournament that takes place every 4 years, and Russia is very keen that nothing gets in the way of anything that might impinge on that tournament. So eastern Ukraine is quiet, but there's still fighting going on. Last week there were military exercises along the borders of the Baltic states, which gave rise to concerns that Russia was practicing for something rather bigger in the future. Russia does not like the fact that not only are the Baltic states and Poland now members of NATO, but also all those four countries have contingents of armies from other countries. The United Kingdom is in Estonia. Germany, I think, is in Lithuania. United States is in Poland. And another big player is in Latvia. So Russia feels threatened. And when Russia feels threatened, it rattles the sabers and makes a lot of noise.
Well, and there have been people who have pointed out that the United States would never tolerate that on their border, that kind of proximity to foreign armies on its border. Europe would feel much the same way, that he is feeling very crowded and, as a result, lashing out. Now, that's the militaristic angle. I do want to talk a little bit about the economics in Russia, though. It's clearly a commodity state. It's oil and gas. It has not modernized its economy. And even now with the Arctic, as you aptly put it, a new front on the Cold War, or could be, he clearly still is looking at a commodity-driven economy. I don't follow the Russian economy that closely, but it doesn't appear that they're really making any moves to try to modernize the economy. He seems to just figure we will be able to ride oil and gas far into the future, even as countries around the world, there's I think seven countries now have talked about or have just declared that the combustion engine automobile is or vehicles will be banned, and it's going electric, or it's going at least biofuel or some alternative form of energy. So what about that? I'm curious whether you have any more insight into Russia. You may be following it more closely just based on your geography than I am.
Well, geography is a fine thing, but Russia is still a long way away. And Russia, of course, is a massive country going from one end in the west to the other in the east. Takes days by train or by car. It's hard for us to judge here. Russian economy is still subject to international sanctions because of eastern Ukraine and the Crimea, so it is suffering on that front. The population is declining, which is never a good thing to happen when a country needs GDP growth, but with a declining population. You're right to say it's dependent on energy and commodities, which is one reason why President Putin is prioritizing, I suppose, that aspect. There are massive deposits also in Siberia, just lying under meters of ice and snow. So there is a lot of scope for the Russian economy to develop, if only it could develop in the way that makes sense.
Yeah, in fact, the other thing that, of course, is squeezing Russia is the fact that oil prices are very low. If we suddenly have access to, Russia does, United States, Europe, whoever has access to even more enormous reserves because of the changing climate and better access to these, not to mention advancing technology that has allowed, certainly here in the United States, the use of fracking has given us access to much more in the way of energy reserves, fossil fuel reserves. Now you're talking about a world awash in oil and natural gas that doesn't do a heck of a lot for prices, and that's part of what's been strangling Russia.
Russia, if it's dependent on energy for exports, then it's going to suffer in the future because we know fracking in the U.S. Has been beneficial. There's starting to be imports now from the U.S., so that eats into the Russian markets. For their gas and oil. We are getting more efficient with the way we use things, so there's less demand for energy. And if someone comes along and invents fusion energy or something based on hydrogen or something comes along that makes electric transmission of cars and trucks more viable, then markets may disappear. Russian reliance on commodities then will not look good.
No, and you bring up a good point. I still bring up that years ago when I was in college, there was a terrific magazine called Omni. It was a science magazine, but a very slick magazine and of great interest. They had an opening column about nuclear fusion at that time, and it was just 10 years away. And there I was, about 20 years old, reading this. And by the time I was 30, it was no closer than it was then. And I remember talking to people at Lawrence Livermore National Laboratory just a handful of years ago and asking them, telling them about that column I had read and what happened. And he said, we sobered up. Well, you know, figured out it was going to be a lot harder than we thought it was going to be to develop fusion. However, that is one of the holy grails of energy. If nuclear fusion can be, if we can trigger the reaction and actually control that reaction, it would be a true game changer. But my point being, just kind of grabbing the coattails of your point, that we don't even account for any new innovations beyond what we already have got. We've got the wind, the solar that's becoming more efficient and cheaper in price. But if hydrogen comes along or fusion or something else that we're not even thinking about right now, suddenly energy will be enormously plentiful, and the countries around the world that have relied on fossil fuels will suddenly be, and I'm thinking Russia, Saudi Arabia, Venezuela, the list goes on from there, will suddenly find themselves in a world of hurt.
I can't dispute that in any way. We just don't know what the future holds.